ओम ज्ञानते मरंदस्य ज्ञानंजना सलकया चक्षु उन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः मुकाम करोति वाचलम् पंगुं लंगायते करिं कृपतमहं वन्दे श्रीगुरुं नतानं I was thinking during the kirtan, a particular thought came to my mind. I thought I would share it with you. We were just at a festival. Radhanath Maharaj and myself were present there. Unfortunately, none of these illustrious Vaishnavas were present. But in South Russia, at the beginning of October, almost 3,000 devotees had gathered for this week-long festival. And during this festival, we had the great fortune to have the association of Radhanath Maharaj, who came and blessed all the devotees who had gathered with his association each day by having kirtan and giving very wonderful lectures, of which I did not miss a single one. We had very wonderful, inspiring kirtans. You can imagine the sound of 3,000 devotees together participating in kirtan. It was quite enthusiastic. But this thought came to my mind actually during the kirtan that I think you have defeated them. That although there were 3,000 devotees assembled, I didn't think I heard such enthusiasm in response from all the devotees there as I have heard here today. So, thank you very much for your enthusiasm for the holy name of the Lord. It is a great inspiration for me. Someday I may awaken some taste for chanting. And I think that I have some great hope if I continue to come and to visit and take part in kirtan with all of you. Because everyone is chanting with such great enthusiasm. Whenever there is an opportunity to chant these holy names of Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, you are indefeatable. Nowhere have I seen such enthusiasm. There's not 3,000 devotees here, I don't think, but maybe close. Right? How many Maharaj? The ones downstairs we're not hearing. Anyways, it was a very wonderful festival, we had the great fortune to be have many wonderful Vaishnavas present. Sachinanda Maharaj had come to that festival. And Gopal Krishna Maharaj had come. I can't think how many. There must have been 16 Maharajas had come. Something like that. And we had classes and during the day and evening programs and morning and evening kirtans. Every morning we had kirtan. No Bhagavatam class. But just... Just the kirtan would start at the Guru Puja and would continue to about 9 o'clock, I guess. And then we just had actually a whole series of festivals. I was... First we had our Odessa festival in southern Ukraine. There were about 1,500 devotees participated in that festival for 1 week. With a similar schedule, kirtans and classes. And then right after that, we went to Kazakhstan. And there, His Holiness Bhakti Bringa Govinda Maharaj had organized a very nice festival for all the devotees in that region. And Shivaram Maharaj participated. Bhakti Vijayapurna Maharaj was also there. Bhakti Vigyan Goswami Maharaj, Radhanath Maharaj's disciple, he was also there in attendance. And Tejas Prabhu was there at that festival, giving some wonderful talks to all the devotees. And we had one day on that festival. That festival also went for about 1 week. We're similar schedule, kirtan all morning long, and then classes during the day, then kirtan practically all night long. One day we had Harinam Day. It started at Mangal Artik, and kirtan ended at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. No, Mangal Artik, then we chanted japa. Then we had Guru Puja and kirtan until 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And then we had broke for lunch until 4 o'clock, and then we had kirtan until about 1 in the morning. Also some very wonderful kirtans there. Indraduna Maharaj was there also, I forgot to mention. Yes, he was there, having some very living kirtans with him. And after our festival in Kazakhstan, then I flew to Moscow on the 24th, and on the 25th morning, His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj arrived in Moscow, and where he gave wonderful classes every day. It was another festival. Wherever Radhanath Maharaj is present, there is a festival. So we had another festival there for about 4 or 5 days, and then he went and visited Ukraine. I wasn't able to accompany him, unfortunately, because I had to go to Divnomorsk, South Russia, for a meeting, of which I wasn't even able to attend because I was too sick. Which meant that Krishna was showing me that I probably should have gone to Ukraine with Radhanath Maharaj rather than going to a meeting. And then Maharaj came to the Divnomorsk festival where there were 3,000 devotees, and that went on for 7 days. So that all took place within less than a month. You might think all we have is festivals there. In one sense it is. Prabhupada would say Krishna consciousness is a continuous festival every day. We had the great fortune to have also the association of many wonderful Vaishnavas who came to take part in those festivals. And I was very much appreciating the points that His Holiness Bhakti Charu Maharaj was making in his presentation about spreading Krishna consciousness and how Srila Prabhupada spread it. He created a structure for spreading Krishna consciousness all over the world. And yet, although Srila Prabhupada created the structure, he never, as we were having a little discussion today, Srila Prabhupada never sacrificed the substance of Krishna consciousness for expanding his structure. That because the substance was always present, because he was always very eager to give Krishna consciousness to everyone in its more pure, in its most pure state, that people becoming attracted to Krishna by his association, they came forward in a very enthusiastic way to want to do something for Srila Prabhupada, and that's how the structure all started. Started first with Krishna consciousness, and then Prabhupada, with his expertise in knowing how to engage others, he would give devotees various responsibilities to bring Krishna consciousness to other places. Just as he is giving it to us, then he would say, now you take it. And then gradually, Krishna consciousness was expanding and the structure began to grow, but Prabhupada never sacrificed this form, structure. With this form of structure, he never sacrificed the substance of always keeping Krishna consciousness at the center of everything. Although he would push us very hard, devotees, I'm sure, Bhakti Chiru Maharaj can testify. Being in Srila Prabhupada's personal presence, of how Srila Prabhupada was quite capable of pushing devotees to take up responsibilities and preach and expand Krishna consciousness. He would do so in such a loving way that the devotees would always be so very eager to please him, to satisfy him, and therefore they were willing to make so much sacrifice to expand his movement. Certainly, there were times when Maharaj also spoke about passion. How Srila Prabhupada dovetailed the passion of his followers and to transcendentalize those passions in such a way to give it substance for spreading Krishna consciousness. And Prabhupada knew our passionate nature for the Westerners, for sure. He knew that we could not sit down simply in some place and chant Hare Krishna all day long. And he would oftentimes caution us about that, that we should not try to imitate Haridas Thakur and to retreat into some place and simply try to chant Hare Krishna. But understanding our nature, he gave us a meaningful engagement and service to distribute his books, distribute the holy name, distribute Krishna, distribute prasadam, and give Krishna consciousness to others. Yet, because of Prabhupada's presence, he was very, very expert in taking those natures which were somehow existing within his Western followers and transcendentalizing them and utilizing them, employing them, their mind, their words, their bodies, in the service of spreading the glories of the Lord. And Srila Prabhupada, because he could see this potential of Krishna consciousness within everyone, therefore the devotees' hearts, they would melt at the opportunity, at the mere thought of being able to do something for pleasing Prabhupada. Therefore we were willing to make so much sacrifice. I remember when Prabhupada, I think I might have mentioned this once before, but it stands out in my mind, when I was, Maharaj mentioned that I used to distribute books in the old days. And back in the 70s, I would have a traveling Sankirtan party and we'd go out and travel throughout America. And one time Prabhupada made this statement. He said, if you want to get my extra special mercy, he said, the devotees who go out in vans and distribute my books, he said, they will get my extra special mercy. Right? You remember that? I was already going out and traveling, distributing books in the van, and I was thinking, such mercy it's incomprehensible, the kind of mercy I'm experiencing. Yet Prabhupada said, the devotees will get extra special mercy. And I was thinking, extra special mercy? So much mercy I'm already experiencing. We were distributing books sometimes 10 hours, 12 hours a day. We go out in the morning, 9 o'clock in the morning, we'd be out there. Next thing you know, somebody would be coming by at 9 or 10 o'clock at night to pick you up all day long. We had to distribute books. We'd stop for lunch. And there was definitely some mercy, austere. We had to undergo great austerities to do this. Yeah. Distributing books in cold weather. Sometimes we'd go out. Udayananda Prabhu is smiling because he knows all this. And I met up with Udayananda Prabhu, I think it was in 1974, wasn't it? Yeah. I was traveling Sankirtan in 1974. That's my first time I met Udayananda Prabhu. We stopped in Detroit and he was a book distributor there. And he trained me up. Right. And then he went out with our party to learn our method of distribution also at that time. And sometimes we would, it was very cold, and in the winter, that we would go out and we'd stay in these vans and sleep outside, sometimes sub-freezing weather, finding different ways to stay warm, and then we'd wake up in the morning sometimes 20 degrees Fahrenheit, which is what, minus 10 degrees, and we'd have to take our bath outside or break ice to go into the lake and to take bath. And yet somehow those austerities, they were just because it was for Prabhupada to go out and distribute books. We developed a certain type of relish for those austerities, although difficult. It was a certain type of relish to do something that was pleasing to Srila Prabhupada. At that particular time, Prabhupada was taking our passionate natures and driving us wild. When he made that statement, you know, the devotees who travel in vans and distribute my books, they'll get my extra special mercy. I remember I was literally driven like a madman. Everyone. Devotees were going out in full force, like complete madmen. On the weekends, we'd stay out till 2 o'clock in the morning, right, distributing books, Saturday nights. I'm not recommending this type of distribution for today. I'm just sort of like giving a kind of indication of what Srila Prabhupada would do to our hearts. And to really, yeah, it's, we were thinking, you know, already the austerities we're performing were so difficult that we couldn't go any farther. But Prabhupada knew how to push us to go even farther. Points that we never thought we could achieve. We were experiencing this by His desire, by His love. And Prabhupada would take those natures and somehow dovetail us and engage us in a way that was meaningful to Him for spreading Krishna consciousness. And Srila Prabhupada would glow when he would hear the book scores. He would simply sit and glow. So inspired, so enlivening, because he felt at that particular time it was necessary to establish some foundation for spreading for Krishna consciousness throughout the world. And of course now, still, distribution of Srila Prabhupada's books is not diminished in any particular way. It is just as important, but now we've come to realize as well that our methods of distribution sometimes were a little bit too passionate. And to some degree, we suffered from that. In the 1970s, the devotees in their efforts to get out as many books as possible, sometimes they did or said things that were just not appropriate. And people got, sometimes, they would get the wrong impression about our movement. Now we have the responsibility that all these books have been distributed to show what Srila Prabhupada, what he was speaking about in his books. We have to show the example of what Prabhupada was talking about. We've come to realize that we're moving up in our method of spreading Krishna consciousness, not just to distribute his books, but to embody his teachings in those books, which has become a very, very vital factor for spreading Krishna consciousness now in the year 2002 and for this decade and for many years to come, that the people have to get an opportunity to see that when they read Srila Prabhupada's books, when Prabhupada speaks about pure devotional service, when Prabhupada speaks about accepting initiation from a bona fide spiritual master to receive the holy name of the Lord, of a pure devotee of the Lord, and all these things that Prabhupada is speaking about, they're there. Everything is there in Prabhupada's books. We know it. We have that confidence. We had that full faith then. We have the full faith now. Everything is there. But now, to push our movement forward, Now we have to show also the example that what Srila Prabhupada was speaking about in his books, that his followers can embody that. And Srila Radhanath Maharaj, of course, is so gracious in how he is speaking about his godbrothers here, you know, calling his godbrothers jewels. And I know, sitting amongst all of these jewels, I'm embarrassed to be referred to as such, but that is his vision. That is his vision. He has so much faith. He has so much faith in what Srila Prabhupada left behind. He has so much faith with everybody, everything that has any contact with Srila Prabhupada. He has so much faith in Srila Prabhupada that he can see someone, even in myself, he can see and refer to it like a jewel. This is glory. Actually, it brings to mind just like the, it's the story of Kalidas, how he received so much mercy from Lord Chaitanya. Why did he receive so much mercy from Lord Chaitanya? Because Kalidas was someone who had so much faith in Vaishnavas. Kalidas was himself a great Vaishnava. He was always absorbed in chanting the holy names of the Lord. He was the uncle of Raghunath Das Goswami. And he would always be seen absorbed in this chanting. Wherever he would go, he would simply chant Hare Krishna. But the example that he showed is that Kalidas was very anxious to take the remnants of food from Vaishnavas. He made no discrimination. If a Vaishnava was born in a family of Sudras, a neophyte Vaishnava, a highly advanced Vaishnava, he made no discrimination. For him, if someone was a Vaishnava, he wanted to simply take his remnants of foodstuff. And he would create a situation, as we know, he would take gifts wherever he would go, of offerings to the homes of Vaishnavas, and he would bring some food and he would wait outside their doors, hiding for them to bring the remnants of foodstuffs outside. Whatever he would bring. He was always very expert. He knew how to bring something that would have to have some remnant. He didn't want everything to be consumed. They had to have some remnant. So he would wait outside, and whenever that remnant would come out, he would go and he would take that remnant, and he would, with great relish, he would take that remnant and relish it. And he had great faith that by taking those remnants, that he was thinking that, you know, that he was benefiting by that. Kalidas, and one time he went to the home of Jadu Thakur. And he brought with him some very nice mangoes to offer to Jadu Thakur. Jadu Thakur, he was in the Munimali caste, which was considered to be a lower caste. But Kalidas, when he came there, he came before Jadu Thakur and his wife. They had some discussion. They began to speak about Krishna for some time. And then Jadu Thakur, he was thinking that, I have to render some service to this great devotee. He said, but I'm very fallen. I want to give him some food to eat, but I can't allow him to take food from my hands. I'm too fallen. So he was thinking, why don't you go to some Brahmin who's nearby? I will give him some food. You go and let him cook some food for you, and you can take from his hand. So you don't have to take from me. Jadu Thakur was also very humble. Although he was very qualified himself, Vaishnava, he was thinking himself unqualified to feed Kalidas. But Kalidas, he said, no, I have simply come here simply to see your lotus feet. Take the dust from your feet. He says, now that I have seen your feet, I've become completely purified simply by seeing your feet. And now I have such a debt. to you. I'm feeling so indebted to you because you've given me the opportunity simply to see your lotus feet. Kalidas was thinking in this way. He had this vision. Such faith. But Jadotaka was thinking himself, as we said, not very qualified. But then Kalidas took advantage. He began quoting various shlokas to support his own conviction. He quoted the verse, Name Bhaktas Chaturvedi Mad Bhaktas Svapacho Priya Tasmai Dayam Tatograyam Sacha Pujo Hitayaham. That even if a devotee is very expert in the Sanskrit Vedic literatures, but if he's not pure in devotional service, Krishna says, he's not accepted with me. But even if one is born in a family of dog eaters, but if he's a pure devotee who has no desire for his sense enjoyment derived from karmic fruitive activities or mental speculation, he is very dear to me. Such devotees, he said, should be given all respect. Whatever they offer should be accepted. And such devotees, they are good as I am. He quoted several other verses. He quoted the verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam describing how even if one is an expert in all the 12 brahminical qualities, but if he's not a devotee of the Lord, he's not considered to be as great as even as one who's born in a family of dog eaters, but is given his mind and his words and his bodies for the service of the Lord. Such a Brahmin who in a position of false prestige, he cannot purify anyone, not even himself. But such a devotee who's given his mind, body and words for the service of the Lord, he can purify his family for so many generations. He began quoting one verse, Aho Bhata Svapacho Tod Gariyan, he quoted that verse. Oh, how glorious are they whose tongue Namatubyam Te Pustapas Te Juhuvu Sashna Aryo. What is it? I forgot the last name. How glorious are they whose tongues are decorated with the holy name of the Lord. Even if such persons are born in a family of dog eaters, still they have considered to have surpassed all the sacrifices performed in a previous life, visited all places of pilgrimage, and have developed all the qualities of an Aryan. When Jadu Thakur heard all these quotes from the mouth of Kalidas, Jadu Thakur is very enlivened. He's thinking, these verses are very nice. Thank you. But they don't have any connection with me. You're not talking about me in these verses. This is how Jadu Thakur felt. But Kalidas, he could understand at this particular point that, well, he was going to leave behind these gifts of mango. You have to go, Maharaj. Yes. He left. He gave these mangoes to Jadu Thakur, and he was turned around. He was about to leave, and Jadu Thakur followed him out away from the home. They spoke a little bit while longer, and then Jadu Thakur returned to the house, and then Kalidas, he took the opportunity immediately of seeing those footprints. Took the dust and began taking that dust all over his body and spreading it. He's getting this dust. He says, I've come to take the dust from your feet. Jadu Thakur would not give. But even though Jadu Thakur would not give, still we could understand that Kalidas was able to get what he was looking for by taking this dust and smearing it all over his body. In fact, this whole pastime describes how Lord Chaitanya also, he did not want devotees to take. We'll get to that point. We won't get. Anyways, he took the dust and then he went and he hid behind a tree waiting, because he knew that sooner or later what he had really come for was going to come outside. He knew the devotees, after eating, taking the food and whatever remnants, they would never leave the remnants in the house. They would always take it outside. Right? That was such as Vedic culture. Just like this one story actually in this connection. I won't digress too much, but it made me think of this one story. Shruti Kirti Prabhu was telling these stories about Srila Prabhupada. He was telling the story that how every day he would go in. He had a little kitchen in Los Angeles next to Srila Prabhupada's room. And he would go in and he would bring Srila Prabhupada, he would cook Prabhupada's meal right in the kitchen, right next to Prabhupada's room. Give Prabhupada his breakfast. And then he would come and he would take Prabhupada's tray and bring it back into the room that he was using as a kitchen. And Shruti Kirti Prabhu would take usually whatever remnants of food that were there, he would distribute to the devotees, and oftentimes Prabhupada took orange in the morning and he would leave some orange peel in the plate. And Shruti Kirti Prabhu would take that orange peel and he would throw it in the trash in the room. And one morning Srila Prabhupada was walking back and forth and he stopped in front of Shruti Kirti's room. And he looked down in the trash and he saw the orange peels in the trash. And he said to Shruti Kirti Prabhu, he said, "What is this? What is this in the trash?" And Shruti Kirti Prabhu would say, "Srila Prabhupada, your remnants are in the trash. They're just, it's the orange peel." But Prabhupada said, "No, have I not trained you up properly? I've trained you up. Haven't I trained you to be a devotee? What are you doing things like this for? This, don't you know this is contaminated?" And Shruti Kirti Prabhu wanted to defend himself and say, "But Prabhupada," you know, in his mind he was thinking, "How is this possible? This is contaminated. Prabhupada, this is coming from your lotus lips. There's no question of any contamination." But Prabhupada became very angry. He said to Shruti Kirti, he said, "What, you malecha?" And Shruti Kirti Prabhu was explaining that Prabhupada sometimes would speak very, very strongly like this. And after he would speak so strongly, then afterwards he would come back and say so many wonderful things so you never felt bad about what Prabhupada would say. But Prabhupada was chastising him because he took those orange peel remnants, the same remnants that sometimes devotees would take. He was thinking these remnants are never contaminated. Sometimes he would say the devotees would take it and they would chew all the white pulp off from the inside and just leave a little of the rind left. But Prabhupada was chastising him, "No, that in this place, this, you're preparing food to offer for the deity. You should never, anything that's been eaten should never be left." He asked, he says, "Is this done in the kitchen downstairs? Do they do this?" And Shruti Kirti said, "No, Srila Prabhupada, they don't. They don't do this. So why are you doing it?" Anyways, so Kalidas could understand that nothing that was eaten would never be left inside. It would be taken outside. So whenever he would bring some offering like mango, he knew that sooner or later some pulp was going to come out, some skin or some seed. And he waited, hiding. So Jadu Thakur, he took that, took those mangoes and he offered them and he ate some of that mango. Then he gave his wife what was left over. She took whatever was left and she took what the pulp and she ate it also. And then she wrapped it in a banana leaf and she took it outside and threw it outside. And Kalidas immediately, upon seeing that, he immediately went for the banana leaf, opened it up. He saw the inside the mango pit and immediately began relishing it, taking whatever he could, those remnants. Such faith he had. And because he had so much faith in Vaishnavas, he was actually able to achieve such a benediction which is not achievable hardly by anyone, so difficult to achieve. That one time when Lord Chaitanya, he was going into Jagannath Temple, every time Lord Chaitanya would enter into the Jagannath Temple, he would stop at one place, some ditch down at the bottom of the stairs. And Govinda Das, his servant, he would carry one water pot. And he would take that water and he would bathe the lotus feet of the Lord at that place. And the Lord had given strict instructions to Govindadas. He said, nobody should ever take this water. Strict instruction had been given. Of course, sometimes, says Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, says sometimes by some means, some devotees would find a way to get it. But still the order was there. But in this particular time, Govinda was taking the water and he was pouring the water over the lotus feet of the Lord, and Kalidas came out and took his hands and he cupped his hands and he collected that water right in the presence of Lord Chaitanya. He took that water and he drank it. But not only did he do it once, he took his hands, collected that water a second time, and he drank it all. And then a third time. Lord Chaitanya was, the whole time, he was standing there watching. Although that strict order was given, nobody should ever take. Kalidas, three times, he took that water. And finally, Lord Chaitanya said, stop. He says, I fulfilled your desire as far as possible. As far as possible. Such mercy. And Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami explains that because Kalidas, his glory is that he had so much faith in Vaishnavas. Advanced Vaishnavas, neophyte Vaishnavas, Vaishnavas born in Brahmin families, Vaishnavas born in Sudra families. For him, it made no distinction. This is a Vaishnava, and I want the dust. I want his remnants of food. Such powerful, three very, very powerful substances are described in this pastime. To take the water from the lotus feet of the Vaishnava, the dust, and the remnants of food. Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami says that one should render service to these three very, very powerful substances. And by rendering service to these three very powerful substances, it is guaranteed that one will achieve an ecstatic love for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Such mercy is there, is available to such devotees who have this vision of faith in Vaishnavas. And also even later, Lord Chaitanya returned to take his meal the same day. He went, took darshan of Lord Nrisingadev, then he returned to his place to take his meal. And he gave some indication. He didn't eat everything. He left some of it behind. He gave some indication to Govinda that Kalidas must be outside waiting for these remnants. So Govinda, understanding his indications, he took those remnants out. And there was Kalidas. The omniscient Lord knew that Kalidas was there. And he also gave his remnants of foodstuff to Kalidas. Anyways, this is one example, one story of the exalted nature of Vaishnavas who actually have this vision to have firm faith. And therefore I can appreciate how such exalted Vaishnavas have received such mercy from the Lord, because they have such vision, that they have so much faith, they always glorifying, Radhanath Maharaj is always glorifying the devotees. Everyone, he's seeing every devotee who has any connection to serving Srila Prabhupada's mission is glorious. So glorious. He wants their association. This is one of his qualities actually. I've never seen Radhanath Maharaj. Even he's so busy. One of his god brothers comes, he stops everything. He immediately sits down. He wants to take their association as much as possible, despite his busy schedule. He has so much faith in the devotees who are serving Srila Prabhupada's missions. Therefore we can see that he has received so much mercy from Lord Chaitanya. And he's distributing that mercy for the benefit of everyone. You are also recipients of that mercy. So I want to thank all of you very kindly for allowing me to come and to be recipients of your mercy. And whatever mercy I'm able to get from all of you, I'm always very grateful to take as much as possible. And I pray that you'll simply allow me to come and to visit all of you again and again and again, and to be in your association and in your enthusiastic kirtan, so we can chant Hare Krishna very enthusiastically together. Sorry for speaking so long. I know there's other speaking devotees who are waiting to speak, but thank you very much, Hare Krishna.
You have to leave? Sorry. Are you leaving? What time is your plane?
Hare Krishna. That's a lot of notes, man. Om Agyanta Marandasya Jananjana Shalakaya Chakshurumanitam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurudeva Namaha. We are born in the darkness of ignorance, and our spiritual master is opening the heart, the torchlight of knowledge, and therefore we offer our most humble and respectful obeisances in the dust of his lotus feet. So, Niranjana Maharaj gave a very nice description of taking the remnants of the Vaishnavas. So, following his instruction and hearing their nectarian speeches, I'll try to just digest a few of those, take those remnants of what they said and keep on going from there. Very nicely, very, very nice. And also Bhakti Chiru Swami, who to me is like the emblem of the mode of goodness. He gave an example of the Western people's passion. So as Radhanath Maharaj said, that I used to associate with Sri Dayananda Maharaj a lot. At one time he told me, Ritavaja Maharaj, you wouldn't know the mode of goodness if you tripped over it. That's the nature of the way. Those who know Maharaj know how this works. So, there's a lot of other things he said that we'll do that later on, huh? Maharaj, Bhakti Chiru Maharaj was mentioning how, one thing, I would do kirtan, but my voice doesn't work. It's broken, and I can only do japa and talk. And if I do kirtan, then I can't do japa and talk, so I have to... I'm sorry, my voice is, it just broke down one time from... Especially now I just came from Asia, and the classes there go from noon till 8 o'clock at night. So that's a lot of talking, like 8 hours of talking. So. But Maharaj brought up the point that Lord Chaitanya appeared when the whole social structure was completely confused. And he was describing how it seems as though Lord Chaitanya likes to preach in the confusion. He seems like he comes into the time when things are at the crest or the peak of confusion or disillusionment or people being distraught. And he comes in at that time to distribute his mercy and to relieve the conditioned souls of the trouble that they're experiencing. So when he said that, I was thinking how much it is true even for those of us who were the recipients of Srila Prabhupada's coming to America. Because Srila Prabhupada appeared in the time, I'm 50 years old, so I've been in America for 50 years, and it's not a long time, but I don't ever remember any other time being as confused or people just in a special kind of mood that has never happened so much before or ever really happened after that is the time when Srila Prabhupada came to America. The youth in America at that time, and I'm sure all of the people from America, you know, they realize this, were at a point where they questioned every single thing that authority gave them. There wasn't one, if somebody told you to do it, it was why. Our parents would say you have to do this, why? Our priests would tell us you have to do this, why? Our professors, our teachers, everyone would tell us you have to do this, and we just said, we don't want to do it until we know why. And there was a big sense of rebellion. Like Radhanath Mara says, I take care of a group of teenage boys for like the last 10 years, and we have one, what do they call that, IBM, it's like an acronym? IBM is an acronym for International Business Meetings, huh? Yeah, it's that acronym. So we have one acronym for teenagers, we call it TRS, which stands for Teenage Rebellion Syndrome. And if anybody here remembers being a teenager or has recently come in contact with a teenager, I'm sure you know what that is. So all of us were of that nature. And somehow another Prabhupada came into the midst of that extreme confusion where students were rebelling and rioting and marching in the streets and going against the nature of their whole country. And Prabhupada walks right into the middle of it as if nothing were happening in one sense, but had the message of the eternal yuga, I mean the yuga dharma for the age in his trunks. He had two trunks or something like that full of books, and he comes into the what do you call it, that the eye of the hurricane, New York City, and he distributes that to release the confusion. To release the confusion, the bewilderment, the frustration, the anxiety, the troubles that everybody was feeling. And I was thinking more that Krishna even makes it even more awkward. Sometimes with the preachers, they're put into different positions. I know when we read in the 8th chapter of the Gita, Prabhupada describes in that verse, yam yam vapi smaram bhavam, those three or four verses, where whatever you do at the time of death and you get something. So Prabhupada was describing that one should chant Hare Krishna constantly, incessantly. And then he says, tolerating all the difficulties. Because there's always so many difficulties. So we've read through the Lilamrita and the different discourses and books that the Prabhupada's disciples given, all Prabhupada's Leelas. And the beginning was just like, it was amazing. Because Prabhupada comes into New York City and he's giving classes in the Bhagavad Gita. And so he asks everybody in the crowd, he says, now you all know Bhagavad Gita, right? And nobody raised their hand. Not one person, you know, when he said Bhagavad Gita, knew what he was talking about in one sense. So he had, in other words, start, what do you call that? Start from scratch. He had to start at the very, very beginning and give us this information. So not only did we not know Bhagavad Gita or Krishna or anything, we didn't know anything about anything, and Prabhupada came and began planting the seeds. In fact, they call Satrup Maharaj's book, first book is called Lifetime in Preparation, the second one's Planting the Seeds. So when I think about this, I was listening to Bhakti True Maharaj saying how Lord Chaitanya comes and spreads this mercy in times of confusion. But you have to imagine that at that time, there was a big protest by the youth, and Prabhupada was attracting the youth. And there was a protest by the youth to not go to this war that was happening in Vietnam. And Prabhupada comes and he preaches his message through a book that was promoting everybody had to go to war. I mean, when you look at it, it's just like, how does it work? How does it grow? How does it manifest? I mean, when you say all odds are against you, literally, all odds are against you. Because Prabhupada was an authority. And we all accepted, although, like I came to the movement very late, in like 1975, and you know we didn't get a very little association of Prabhupada, but we knew that he was in control of thousands of Hare Krishnas from the West. He was in control of each and every one of us. And so, how that happens is just like, it's amazing to me. How he pulled this whole Hare Krishna movement out of that humble beginning and that whole scenario that was happening in America at that time. So when Maharaj was telling me about how it came in confusion, it just seems like, because I remember those years. I remember being so totally confused and bewildered and looking for direction and looking for answers to the questions, and nobody could give the answers. And Prabhupada would come and he'd give the answers. I remember I was talking to the devotees, and the devotees, as kind of like, I wrote a lot of notes here, so Prabhupada was like the fire, you know? He was like a fire. He had a fire of preaching, what do you call it, desire. It was like burning desire to help the conditioned souls. Because he heard the message from his spiritual master to go and preach, and he took that to heart. I was in Burijan's class one time in Vrindavan. He said that verse, Vyavisyak Makaburi, that one point of attention, when Prabhupada read that commentary, that one should take the mission of the spiritual masters as life and soul. And Prabhupada said, at that point, I realized what I had to do. And so that desire to fulfill the mission of a spiritual master began to manifest, and it was implemented within the Western countries. Tried it in India, as Bhakti Trumara said, but took it to the West. And he created a fire that created so much, it was such a big flame, so many sparks were going off. And each and every one of those sparks had the same potential as the fire, it seemed like. It was amazing because you would come in contact with a devotee, and within hours, your whole perception of the world would change. Just with a moment's association with the devotees. I was describing that, I was thinking, because Prabhupada said that when he came to America, he noticed that there were churches everywhere. He wrote that one place. He said there were churches everywhere. And therefore he could understand there were devotees everywhere. If there's people worshiping God, then that means there's devotees. And so that desire that every living entity has to wonder or to understand their relationship with God, Prabhupada describes it as just like dry grass. And when the spark hits the dry grass, then it ignites. And so when Prabhupada touched the dry grass of our hearts had been dried up, completely dried up. No hope was left, practically speaking. And when you read the Bhagavatam, you can understand, at that point, one is qualified for spiritual life. When one sees no answers, no hope, no meaning, no purpose, at that point, then the message of the Bhagavatam can enter into the core of the heart and it can become revealed. So Prabhupada was like that big fire. And from that fire came so many sparks. And you could see that these sparks, they went everywhere, everywhere. Just everywhere, lighting up the devotees. So we were also, we caught on fire. The devotees, as Maharaj says, you know, we are in a mode of passion. Imagine all those Western people, no culture. Just like I was working in America in Gurukul, and we moved our school to Mayapur. And the Mayapur teacher said, Maharaj, if you're going to bring your Western boys here, you have to come with them because we don't know what to do with them. They're like a special entity, the Western teenagers. And so I had to, that was Krishna's mercy. I got to go to Mayapur for 4 months each year. So seeing this, and that was just one of the points that I got from Bhakti Tru Swami's discussion. And Niranjana Maharaj was describing how, Bhakti Tru Maharaj is also describing how the devotees, Prabhupada, how much he wanted the people of India to become devotees, and that it was a little slow start here. And it's amazing how, just like Radhanath Maharaj was, as Niranjana Maharaj says, was humbling us by his glorification. And so we can see that how one spark of the fire has created so many other sparks here in Bombay, it's just amazing when we come here how we see all these devotees, isn't it? It's just everywhere in the world people talk about you. I don't know if you know that or not. Everywhere in the world people talk about Chaupati. That's how you say it? Chaupati? Devotees. And usually when people talk, they talk all bad things. You ever notice that? I don't know how that is, you know. Because even amongst the devotees, we may have some faults. But what is that? It's like the spots on the moon or the ink spot on the sheet. It's so funny how the whole sheet can be white, but there's one spot on it, and everybody just focuses on the spot and misses the whole sheet. But in America and the rest of a lot of the places that I go to, Chaupati is known to be like an emblem of a place or a beacon of light within our society as to how normal human beings can become Hare Krishnas. And we say that with lots of realization because those of us that came from the West, at that point we weren't very normal. Prabhupada normalized us. That's why I have my little campaign now, normalization of the Hare Krishna movement campaign. Where we wear matching socks and, you know. I mean, imagine. I'll give you just an example of how I can appreciate this community because I haven't seen how it operates, but I've heard that there's such a nice structure of training the members who are coming here to act and behave in a way which is appropriate for time, place, and circumstance. So you can imagine, I'll start the story out. Before I became a devotee and even knew Hare Krishnas, I was a university student and also working as a foreman for civil engineering work crews. And somehow or another at the university we came in contact with one of these things that shows the, what do you call it, physiognomy, the nature of the body, how the body works, physical nature of the body. And it showed how we're not supposed to eat meat. We're supposed to eat vegetarian food. So I thought, oh, that makes sense. So we became vegetarians. And we started thinking about slaughterhouses and stuff, and we just decided to not eat meat. And so I went home and I told my mother. I said, Mom, I said, I don't eat meat anymore. This is early 70s, mid-70s, something like that. And she looked me in the eye. You know how mothers are sometimes, right, when they're concerned? My mother looked me in the eye and she says, if you will go, I will pay for your psychiatrist. That was her words, you know. So what to speak of when we joined the Hare Krishna movement and one day we showed up, our hair used to be like this and we come with a completely shaved head, sikha, orange robes, and your mother looks at you and she just wonders, what happened now, huh? I remember when I was a college student, we had this long hair, and my father was always lecturing me, why don't you get a haircut like a normal human being? Why don't you be normal? Why don't you be normal? And then I came home, shaved head, nicely, just like this, and my father says to me, oh, you cut off all your beautiful hair. I can't remember who said it. I think it was Bhakti Chumar says that the ISKCON movement, it's meant to, it's Prabhupada established the institution to continue this movement to bring people back home, back to Godhead. And sometimes we think it's kind of like the launch pad. It's that thing which we create, which sends everybody back home, back to Godhead. It's meant to be that. So, I was thinking of that when you mentioned how nice this community is and how welcomed. Just like sannyasis, we go around the world and we know where we're welcomed and where we're not, isn't it? We feel it. What do you call it? We do a vibe check, a vibration check. There's some places you go and you get a nice feeling of reciprocation from the Vaishnavas and immediately you feel like you have to be there, you have to go back, you have to work hard to help them. It's an immediate feeling that comes within the heart. And you go other places and you don't feel that reciprocation, and you have to almost like force yourself. It's kind of like when you see the kind of prasadam on your plate that you really like, then you think, oh, well, this is going to be fun. And you begin to eat. But if you get the type that's on your plate that you don't really like, just like in America, Gruel Cool Boys don't like eggplant. If you put eggplant on the plate, it's just like torture for them. So they'll look at it and they'll go, they kind of like pick, you know. So it's like that. So we can see how warmly, I've been here two or three times now, and how warmly we're received by these Vaishnavas. And everywhere you see them, they stand out. And everywhere you go in America, people say, oh, Maharaj, you got to go to Chaupati. You have to see those Vaishnavas. It's really, really amazing. These Vaishnavas are so amazing. Radhanath Maharaj has done such a wonderful job. He's trained them so nicely. They have so much respect. They have so much faith in him, so much respect for devotees, so much bhakti for Krishna, that you have to go and see these devotees. And then when you come here, you see everybody. And you see the faces. Was it Maharaj, you mentioned like you say glowing? Is that what you were saying? How the devotees glow. They actually shine out greater than any other people. I remember one time I was coming to India, and you all know Vaninath Vasu, the big tall black devotee. So we went to New York to get our visas to come to India. And we have our system. We go to New York Sunday, eat the Sunday feast, pack up a whole bunch of they have a bake sale there, get a whole bunch of prasadam for the airplane. Next morning, go to the embassy, get our visa. That night, you fly off to Europe and then come to America. So I remember, I gave the Bhagavatam class on that. It was a Monday morning. I gave the Bhagavatam class. And then me and my friend, we hopped on the subway. It was like February. We hopped on the subway, went to the embassy uptown Manhattan. So I'm on the subway, and I see this girl. I say, oh my God, that looks like a very pious girl. And I thought, okay, Maharaj, don't look at the girls. It's like, you know, you're not supposed to do that, you know. I was just thinking, then I looked at her and I said, well, this girl is really pious. I wished I had a book or something, or a card from the temple. I said, I should give this person an invitation. And then an elderly person came on the subway. And in New York City, if you have a seat, it's sacred. Nobody gives up a seat in New York City. But this old lady came on, and this girl gets up and she gives the lady her seat. And I thought to myself, I knew this girl was nice. I knew this girl had some special qualities, you know. And I thought, oh, come on. I said, okay, enough is enough, you know. And then when I was walking off the subway, she goes, nice class this morning, Maharaj. I really liked it, you know. And I said to her, oh, you're a devotee. And she says, yeah, Maharaj, I'm going out on Sankirtan. And she had one of these shopping bags full of books and the thing. So out of all the people that I saw on the subway that day, I see this one girl, and she's bundled up like New York City, you know, like you have to do in Russia, that double coat, double hat, and scarf. All you can see is just the face. And all you see is the face, and they say, oh my God, this person stood out amongst all the other people on that subway because they'd come in contact with the Krishna consciousness movement. They'd actually been touched. They'd been sparked. They'd been purified. They'd been purified by the practice of Krishna consciousness. I always say that sometimes devotees come to me, or you get letters, and I'm sure you all get those letters also. They say, oh, Maharaj, I'm so fallen. I can't think of Krishna. I'm in so much maya. It's so hard. You know, it's all these difficulty letters, you know, that I can't remember Krishna. I'm at the office. I'm here. My wife, my children, my this, my that. It's so difficult. I can't remember Krishna. So I always write them back a letter, and I say, it's not true. I mean, we think of Krishna so much all the time as devotees. You're in the movement. I remember the first time the devotees preached to me, it took days for me to digest it. I was just like thinking over and over and over every word they said, trying to figure out how is it possible that they know all this stuff. I was just in Hawaii on my way to Asia, and I needed a pair of shoes, so I went to an athletic store. So there was a young girl that was the sales assistant. So when I go shopping, I get bewildered. I don't know if devotees know, we know how to purchase. If we know exactly what we want, we can just go get it and come. But when you have to shop, I get really mental. Because you don't know, you know which thing to get. It's like so many things in there. You're just like looking around, the lights are glaring and all the fancy advertising things. You really don't know what to do. So this girl came up to me about 17, 18, 19. You're just a young high school or college girl. And she says, "Oh, do you have any questions?" So I said, "Yes." I said, "What's the purpose of life?" I said, "I'm suffering so much here." I said, if I want to enjoy in this world, why is it at every moment I'm trying to enjoy so much suffering is coming down on my head? I said, and another question I have is, I don't want to die. I don't understand why this happens to me. Why? What is death? What happens to us at the moment of death? And this girl is sitting there like shocked, you know? She's wondering, she says, I don't know if I can answer those kind of questions. She's like, "Do you have any questions about the shoes?" I said, "Well, I don't know. If I have any questions about the shoes, I'll come and see you, you know?" So then I was looking and looking and looking. It took 10, 15, 20 minutes. And this girl came over to me and she says, "Those questions really bothered me. I'm trying to figure those things out myself now." So this is what happens when you see the devotees. I was recently talking to a devotee and they said, "Oh, Maharaj, it's so hard to remember Krishna when I'm working." I said, "It's not hard to remember. You're already remembering Krishna." I said, "Just try to not remember Krishna. Just try to do it. Try, just if you can just take an experiment right now in this room and don't think of Krishna." What was that one guru who said, "Don't think of something"? He said, and then that devotee thought about it his whole life. You say, just not like in that sense where I'm trying to make you think of something. Just try for a second to separate Krishna out of your life. Just try to separate everything that Guru has given us. Just try to separate. I mean, when we walk down the road, we don't see things the same anymore. Everything we see through the teachings that we've gotten from Guru Krishna. We're thinking of Krishna all the time. I remember one time there was one of our god brothers. And I'll save his, I will I'll not say his name because he got in a little maya, not to embarrass him. So sometimes in the West, devotees get in maya and they watch movies. You know, because Prabhupada said, I checked cinema one time, Prabhupada never said we should go to the cinema. So sometimes the devotees would get in a little fallen, they would rent movies. So they would get together, these devotees in Hawaii, and they rent those, like you make, those discs, but of non-devotional movies, and they would watch them. So that they would go to this one devotee's house who was like an ex-temple president and like a big preacher. And so they'd have the video inside there. There'd be four or five of his godbrother friends and they're watching the movie. And then the movie would come on and then the owner that he had the house, he had that remote control thing. And the movie would go on for like 3 minutes. He'd push it and he said, "Yeah, just like Prabhupada said." You know, Prabhupada said, "Just like that," you know, and about then a few more minutes, and he turned it off again. He said, "Yeah, Krishna says just like that," you know. So even they know that movies are maya, and they choose to get maya, and they stick it into the maya machine. When they turn it on, they still can't forget Krishna. And everything that the karmi people are saying on the movies reminds them of philosophy, what things that, "Oh yeah, one time I was with Prabhupada, he said something," and the movie's going on, and this person's clicking and stopping and starting the movie like every 4 or 5 minutes, and finally one of the devotees in the room says to him, "Come on, Prabhu, can't we just watch the movie without making comments? We can just make the purports, class can be after the movie." So we can't forget Krishna. Devotees can't forget Krishna. I remember Shiva Ram Maharaj would preach to me when I was becoming a devotee. And I remember he tricked me into devotional service. You all know Shiva Ram Maharaj. In those days he was so strong. Not that he's weak now, but he was like Brahmachari. That was back in the non-normalized days. Sometime I'll tell the story of my first 18 hours in the Hare Krishna movement, and we'll make a video out of this one. This could be a comedy on a TV. But anyway, I went to the temple one time with my former wife and friends, and we stayed a couple of days, and we came out of there just like, we'd never met devotees, but we were chanting Hare Krishna, but we'd never met devotees. So we first met devotees. I remember the first time I saw the devotee that answered the door at 2 o'clock in the morning, shaved up like Bhakti Chumars, I thought, oh my God, it's aliens. We didn't know what they were, because we'd never seen them before. Again, I come from the most least populated part in America, and things like that don't happen very often there. So I remember Shiva Ramaraj was marking me. You know, now today I can understand what was going on, but he knew he had a live wire inside, you know. So I went back to my work. We came for the weekend, and then 1 week went by, 2 weeks went by, and Shiva Ramaraj calls me up and says, you have to come and help me fix the temple, right? I said, oh, what's wrong? He says, everything. The building's falling apart. So I said, okay, I work for the government. I have so many weeks vacation. So I said, okay, I'll come and help you for 2 weeks. So then I go there, and there's not hardly anything wrong with the temple. So what happens is that every morning, Mangal Arati, then Tulsi Puja, then Japa, then Guru Puja, then Bhagavatam class, then Prasadam, then like 1 hour of work, then more Prasadam, then 1 hour more of work, then class, then kirtan. So literally 24 hours a day I was supposed to be working. I was working maybe an hour and a half. And Shiva Ramaraj is preaching to me straight for 2 weeks. 2 weeks straight, preaching to me. And then my vacation's over and I have to go home. So then I get home and the whole world looks different. I'm looking at, you know, I look at my wife and I'm thinking, oh no. And my work and everything has changed. And all my friends are looking at me and they say, oh man, this guy's really changed. Huh? And so then we realize, my friends would say, oh, let's go do this. And I'd say, I don't know, I don't really want to do that now. They say, oh, come on, let's go. And I say, no, not tonight. And all of a sudden my friend said, oh man, the Hare Krishna's got him. The Hare Krishna's got him, you know. And then I realized one time, I said, oh no, I can't enjoy in the material world anymore. I said, my ability to enjoy, I mean, we can the same pleasure is out, but you feel this sensation or this inside thing saying, you can't do this anymore. It's wrong to do this. You can't be like that anymore. You have to be like this. Look at those guys. They know everything. You have to be like these people. So I called Shiva Ramaraj. I was so frustrated at that point. Like Krishna, Arjuna says, I was definitely the raven cloud at that point. Because there was no happiness in the material world and there was no happiness in the spiritual world at that time. So I called Shiva Ramaraj up on the phone and I said, you have literally ruined my whole life. And I don't know if you know Shiva Ramaraj, but he's like really, he's got this deep Hungarian voice. He says, you fool. I said, I didn't ruin your life. I said, I'm giving you a life. Huh? And that's what Krishna consciousness is. It's given us this wonderful life, this life of being with the devotees, this life which offers us a chance, a glimmer, what do you call it, a glimpse or a spark of hope in the ocean of nescience. Just a moment's association of the devotees and our whole lives change. And it's so important. Huh? What it has done to us. Bhakti Chumars was explaining how he probably wanted the Indian people to become devotees. And Prabhupada, I never heard the lecture or read it, but I heard that Prabhupada said, yes, the Indians are like diamonds and the Westerners are like coal. Huh? They're both carbon elements. Diamonds and coal are both the same. What do you call it? Constitution. What do you call it? He says, the Indian people, all you got to do, they're diamonds. All you got to do is just dust them off. They're already shining. But the Western people, he says, I have to press into devotees. Huh? So Prabhupada has pressed us. He's pressed all these people. You can imagine where we were going, what we were doing. No, you don't imagine. Just take it for us. Just believe us when we say it, that Krishna consciousness is the most wonderful thing that one can get. It's a valuable jewel. It's a jewel amongst jewels. It's like one of you were saying something about jewels. Ramaraj was telling us we were jewels. What do you call it? Gems in the rough, huh? So the idea is that this Krishna consciousness movement is the jewel. It's the jewel that shines out. And anybody who touches it, it's like a touchstone. Prabhupada says that this Hare Krishna movement is like a disease. It's infectious. If you come in contact with it, you'll get sick. It's like last night I was staying in Calcutta, and one of the boys comes in and says, "Oh, by the way, Maharaj, 21 people got malaria in the temple last month." I thought, "Well, thank you for the information, you know." I said, "So if you touch, you just touch a little mosquito, what can a mosquito do? We're so much bigger than a mosquito. But in one mosquito, he just touches you a little bit, then you are down on your hands and knees for weeks and weeks and weeks." So in the same way, this Krishna conscious movement, even though we were so filled up with materialism, that just a little tiny injection from the words of the pure devotee destroyed everything that was in our hearts. Destroys it all. All hope. The desire still may be there, but the hope to get that point. We understand that the carrot is now at the end of the stick. Huh? Devotees actually have come to the point that we realize that we're never going to get that carrot. Although we may still be looking at it, we know we're not going to get it. We're not an illusion anymore. We may still have desires, but that illusion has been broken. Desire in the heart, they may be coming up, but the illusion of seeing that, yes, we can get this, we can get this. We realize, why am I so stupid to think that I can get that carrot when I've never got it before? Why am I so foolish to think this way? What's wrong with me? And the devotees pray and pray and pray to Prabhupada and Krishna and Guru to please give me your blessings, give me your mercy so that I can get rid of this nonsense for once and for all. So this is the blessing that the Vaishnavas have given us. I think I went over my quota. So anyway, I'm just very, very happy to be here. As all of us have said, everybody is very impressed. People all over the world speak of this community. So we hope and pray that you just continue to do this. And everywhere you go, you should understand that there's a little dry grass. And all you do, you just touch everybody with Krishna. And so many more and more and more and more will come. And pretty soon we'll have everybody. Huh? Everybody will come. So thank you very much. Huh? Yeah. And everybody please be normal, right? Don't tell your mother which mother are you. Don't do those things. Please don't do those things. Is that okay? Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jai. Bhakti Chu Swami Maharaj has to leave for Juhu temple now, and then he's flying to South Africa tonight to spread Prabhupada's gems in the South African continent. So we should all wish him a very, very safe and pleasant journey, because although airplanes are never pleasant no matter what you do, we hope that everything is smooth and very, very pleasant and wonderful for you tonight. We hope Krishna blesses you every day on that trip. Just give Prabhupada's mercy there. So we can say bye.
So all of us are very fortunate to have such Sangha here. Maharaj just as Krishna's planet has unlimited varieties of fruits and flowers, so we can see the Maharajas have unlimited varieties of deliveries. Sometimes they like to think the Hare Krishnas are brainwashed robots. The only thing is we haven't been able to duplicate any robots. No two devotees are alike. So, Prabhupada said that this Hare Krishna movement will be another chapter in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. When you read the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya, you feel like, when can I become part of that? Now everyone in here has become part of that due to the mercy of Srila Prabhupada and my God brothers. So I was, I won't take up too much of your time, but just wanted to tell you a couple little pastimes of Srila Prabhupada that were very impressionable upon me in my devotional service, and how I see Prabhupada's vision and Prabhupada's prophecy coming to pass. Back in 1976, at the Mayapur Festival, we had a very large festival that year. Remember that, Maharaj?
You were there as well, 76?
I was a member of the Radha Damodar traveling Sankirtan party. A very unnormal group of people. And we take pride we were unnormal, even to this day, Maharaj. But we were enthusiastic to distribute Prabhupada's books. Actually, before the festival, Prabhupada came to Chicago and he installed four sets of Gorne Thai deities, like the deities we saw last night, except they were brass, about that size. And we were having a very big jugya. These were installed deities. They weren't home deities. They were actually on the level of a temple with six offerings a day. And we had over 100 brahmacharis in the temple, and Prabhupada was presiding over the jugya. And so, after all the chanting, mantras, and so on, Prabhupada spoke. He looked at all his young brahmacharis. He says, "So, in a previous yuga, Vishvamitra Muni attained perfection by performing severe austerities for 60 thousands of years." He says, "So, you can get the same result by going on book distribution a few days." And all the boys were there, and we were, like Mara was saying, living in vans and performing austerity and distributing Prabhupada's books, knowing the mercy of book distribution. But eventually it kind of dawned on us what Prabhupada said, and we gradually went, "Haribo!" And everyone cheered. So that is the power of this movement, and that is the power of Srila Prabhupada. Sometimes we talk of how Prabhupada came with only 40 rupees in his pocket to America. Who can imagine 40 rupees going to the United States? I don't know how Prabhupada got through customs, really, with 40 rupees. You have to have a certain amount of money. But somehow or other, Prabhupada went to America and established this international society. But not with 40 rupees, because they wouldn't even change the rupees. Back then, the rupees were worth nothing. Americans says, "What? Rupees? Take them back." Prabhupada went back to India much time later with the same 40 rupees. So virtually, Prabhupada went to the West with nothing. That is this great miracle. So, in 1976, Prabhupada had this fabulous festival, Sridhar Mayapur. We were having chanting competitions. from different temple would try to, from Germany would challenge, England would challenge, the Radha Damodar party and would challenge Namhata, and everyone would try to outdo the other in kirtan. And they were dancing just like madmen. Each group would try to outdo the other, and they would be chanting and spinning, and Chicago had synchronized murdungas going with cartels. And then they would all come together for kirtan in one room. And it was like pandemonium. And at that time, after Guru Puja, Prabhupada would circumambulate Sri Radha Madhava. He'd go behind the Didi house. Marge, you were there, right? And he would start ringing the bell. Of course, he was there. He'd start ringing the bell, and the devotees would just dance uncontrollably in ecstasy. And I remember one time, there were so many famous sannyasis, and Vishnu Jana was there, Tamal Krishna Maharaj was there, Sudama Maharaj was there, Guru Kripa, Yasodhananda, and so many leaders. They were passionate, but they were leaders, no doubt. And one day, we were dancing wildly, and Guru Kripa Maharaj was next to Srila Prabhupada, and all of a sudden he ran away from Prabhupada about 30 feet. And there's all these devotees packed in like this, and as he ran through the devotees, they just parted like the sea. And he turned and he faced Srila Prabhupada, and then he sprinted directly at Srila Prabhupada. And we're all going, what is he doing? And about 10, maybe 8 feet from Prabhupada, he fell on his knees, slid, touched Srila Prabhupada's feet, all in one motion, and jumped up. And Prabhupada had this big smile. And everyone went, Haribo! So the Radha Damodar party was very much in the mode of passion. And all of us were relishing this like anything. So then, there was one sannyasi named Retivananda Swami who was very conservative and thought, this is a little too much. The Swami two-step or three-step is what, you know, we should be doing, not all this business. So he went up and all the sannyasis were there and said, Prabhupada, it's getting kind of crazy down there on the kirtan floor. And Prabhupada was quiet, didn't say anything. He said, and then he said, yes. When you become in love with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you dance like a madman. And all the other devotees went, Haribo! Just like that. So, later on we went to Vrindavan, and Prabhupada, it was Ram Nomi, and it was an incredible festival day. Maybe the festival day of my life. Because I got to go on the morning walk with Srila Prabhupada due to the mercy of my best friend, Pragoshdas Prabhu, who was Pragoshdas Brahmachari. That time Prabhupada would only allow, because there was about somewhere between 600 and 800 devotees there, he would only allow the GBC or sannyasis on the morning walk. But because Pragoshdas was probably the biggest book distributor, I think, in the world, and incidentally, he's still distributing Prabhupada's books, and we were best friends since we were 7 years old, he was very merciful. Tripurari Maharaj said, come on, Pragosh, we're going on the walk with Prabhupada. So he turned to me and said, come on the walk. I said, oh, I'm just a brahmachari. I can't go on the walk. He says, come on. Prabhupada is Patita Pavana. And who's more fallen than you? And I said, okay. You have defeated me with philosophy. So he grabbed me, and we had to get in these cars and these ambassadors. And there was all these GBC men, my older godbrothers, sitting there. And Pragosh crammed in, and then he pulled me on top of everyone. And I'm 6'2".
So I'm laying on all the GPC saying, please forgive my offenses for Bruce. And then Prigo said, cello, cello, and the driver took off. So we went on this walk, and we walked for over 1.5 hours on that trail where the cowherd boys took the cows. It was so sublime. Prabhupada was preaching very strong. And then when he came back, we had this incredible Guru Puja. Just, you know, that's a whole story in itself, just the Guru Puja. And then Prabhupada gave this amazing class. And then all day long, the governor of Uttar Pradesh came, met with Srila Prabhupada, all the dignitaries and Sri Vrindavan Dham. They came before Prabhupada, and Prabhupada was preaching like Shinga Guru, like a lion, all day long. And then at night, there was a big festival in Mathura. And there was 20, maybe 30,000 people there. And Prabhupada at the beginning said, I must apologize to my American and English disciples because I will be preaching in Hindi. Prabhupada was so kind to us. So Prabhupada started preaching, and the entire audience was enwrapped with attention. He had so much power because of his pure devotion for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And I was, I still don't understand Hindi. I didn't then and don't now. But because Prabhupada was preaching different shlokas, we could kind of follow what Prabhupada's preaching line was. But beyond that, it was just ecstatic to see a Mahabhagwat preach Krishna consciousness purely to conditioned souls out of great compassion. And then it dawned on me, as I looked around at all my God brothers and God sisters, there were some from Germany, there were some from France, from Africa, from Asia, from South America, North America. And I was thinking, Krishna, he has fulfilled the desire of Lord Nityananda to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world. He has fulfilled the prediction of Bhaktivinoda Thakur that when were the Russians and the English and the French and Americans come and chant Jai Sachinandana Gaura Hari.
Jai Sachinandana Gaura
Hari. And I was amazed, and I was looking, who is this personality? Who is my guru? Who is our guru? And I was in awe of Srila Prabhupada. And then I thought, you have done it all. You don't need to do anything else. You have done it. You have gone, you've taken it single-handedly with the West. No one helped you. He called his God brothers. No one came to assist him. He just went, just on this fervent faith, this fervent determination to fulfill the desire of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, to fulfill the desire of his Guru Maharaj. He had done it. He's preaching to tens of thousands of people at the birthplace of Sri Krishna himself. He had done it. And he preached late into the night. And then, as the program broke up, it was very late. It was 11:30, and we didn't get back to Vrindavan till after midnight. And all the devotees were so ecstatic, yet so exhausted, keeping up with Srila Prabhupada. And we were only 25 years old, and he was 75 years old. So, I was staying in Fogal Ashram at the time, if anyone's been to Vrindavan. And with all my God brothers. And until that time, we'd been there for about 6 weeks, and I had made a vow never to eat anything that wasn't served at the temple. Because with the Western bodies, if you eat, especially in the marketplace, it's very dangerous. Well, one of my rascal God brother brahmacharis on the Radha Damodar party said, Prabhu, all the prasadam in Loi Bazaar is, or all the food in Loi Bazaar is prasadam. Because it's Vrindavan and there's Braj Bussies. So you can eat anything. And I said, I don't know, Prabhu. He says, look at those jalebis. Don't those look delicious? So I said, oh, come on, have some. So I said, okay. Later that evening, I paid the price. So nature was calling. So it was, everyone was laying, sleeping. All of a sudden, I had to run to the bathroom, do my business. I took a little shower, came back, lay down again. Again, uh-oh. Back to the bathroom. Four times this happened in less than 20 minutes. Finally, I just said, I surrender, Krishna. I'm not going to sleep tonight. So I thought, well, maybe I'll go join the... Prabhupada had 24-hour kirtan at that time. So I thought, I'll go down to Krishna Balaram and join 24-hour kirtan. So I took a shower, went down to from Fogal Ashram to Krishna Balaram Mandir. Went into the temple and there was one German brahmachari. He had his murdunga on his lap and he was laying on the murdunga going, Hare Krishna, bum, bum, Hare Krishna. And I was thinking, I'm just not quite advanced enough to be relishing this kirtan. So then I thought, well, what I'll do is I'll just go chant my rounds. So I walked out the front of the temple. It's about 2:30 in the morning. Everyone but that one brahmachari was dead, asleep, exhausted. And as I came around the back of Krishna Balaram, I came up to Srila Prabhupada's room. And there was a light in the room. As I came up to the light, I could see in the room, and there was Srila Prabhupada. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur says, and he was translating the Bhagavatam. And I was thinking, why? Why are you doing this? You have already done everything. You have already spread Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement all over the world. You've already fulfilled the desire of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. You have already all day long tirelessly preached the Bhagavatam to anyone and everyone that came into your room. And then you had a festival for 30,000 people. Why are you up doing this? He scarcely could have had 2 hours sleep. And I thought, it is a miracle. I'm witnessing a miracle. And there was no fanfare. No one even knew it. Practically no one in the world has known it, but you people today. That after all of that effort, all of that sacrifice, he was so urgent, the translating Bhagavatam, for the benefit of mankind for the next 10,000 years. And Prabhupada said, these purports are my spiritual ecstasies. So by the mercy of Krishna, I was able to directly witness Prabhupada in a state of spiritual ecstatic bliss. And just bewilder my mind of how he could have, at the advanced age of 75 years, between that. And why did he do that? He did it for each and every one of us. You should not think that Prabhupada was not personally considering you and you, you and you, every single one of you. He was writing those books. He preached this message. And he made such disciples as my God brothers. This is the power of my Guru Maharaj. He is so powerful that he can make pure Vaishnavas. And we still do not think Srila Prabhupada is not here. He reasons ill who thinks that Vaishnavas die when thou art living still and sound. Vaishnavas die, or what is it? Vaishnavas die to live, and living spread the holy name around. So his Vani is still here. And his Vapu is right there. That is not a statue. It is actually Srila Prabhupada. And actually Srila Prabhupada will reciprocate with you. And if you, anyone in this room, wants to directly associate with Srila Prabhupada, then you find out from Prabhupada's disciples, what can I do to please Srila Prabhupada? These souls that have totally surrendered to Srila Prabhupada's desires, they can tell you. They can tell you every single moment of your life what you can do to please Srila Prabhupada. I want to ask one question before I quit, or before I stop this talk. How many in here have read Srila Prabhupada's books? Raise your hand. Okay. Now, how many in here can actually feel in their heart that they love Srila Prabhupada? Raise your hand. That you feel love. Don't be humble either. If you feel some love, and you might don't think, oh, I'm not Nicholson. So many, you're feeling so much love for Prabhupada. Now, how many of you here have actually seen Srila Prabhupada in his person? Forget about you guys. You see? You see what I'm saying? Prabhupada is here. Prabhupada didn't demand, you love me. You read his books. You see what he's done. You see what he's given. How can you not love? If you can't love, your heart is made of stone. But if you associate it with steel. And these are like steel workers. They can melt your hearts. Even if you have hearts of steel, if you associate with my God brothers, they will melt your heart. I will tell you, the last time I was in Bombay was 25 years ago in 1977. None of you were here. And I remember when the news came, I'm a whole nother story, but I was not in Vrindavan on the exact day that Srila Prabhupada left. But I was in Udaipur for one reason or another. And we had a taxi driver, who was driving us around. He knocked on our door and he said, Bhaktivedanta no more. I said, what? He said, Bhaktivedanta Prabhupada, no more. And I said, what are you saying? And then another devotee I was with says, I think he's saying that Prabhupada left. And he had the Times of India, and he showed me my spiritual master's picture on the front. And it said, Bhaktivedanta Prabhupada dies. Or leaves this world. It was very nicely put. Leaves this world. And that's how I found out Srila Prabhupada left. So, I was thinking when I got on the airplane, when we went to the airport, and actually, we had a reserve ticket for Indian Airlines, and when the airplane came in, they had overbooked the flight, so there was no seats for us to go to Vrindavan. And that had actually happened 2 days before. I was actually supposed to go to Vrindavan on November 13th, but they had overbooked the flight. And I said, so what do I do now? I have a reserve ticket. You overbooked the flight. How do I get on this airplane? He says, you get on the next flight. And I said, so when is the next flight? And they said, 2 days from now. So that was on the 13th. And as we all know, Prabhupada left on the 14th. So this was the 15th. So again, the plane came in and they said, there's no seats on the plane. So me and the temple president, Govardhan from Detroit, asked to see the managing director of the airport. And we went in and we got down on our knees and we begged and we said, our Guru Maharaj has left the planet and we must get to Vrindavan. Please, we are begging you. We are simply begging from the core of our hearts, please let us get on this plane. And by Krishna's mercy, he was a Vaishnav. And he actually went on the plane and took two people off the plane. And we got on the plane. And as we were on the plane, I was thinking, how, oh, Krishna, you're so merciful to let me be on this plane. Because now I can go back to Vrindavan. Now I can go say Prabhupada Samadhi. I can't, you know. And then I was thinking, oh, the world is empty now. Now the world is empty. It is finished. And these people don't even know. They don't even know what just happened. They do not understand what just happened to this planet. I was thinking like this. I was looking at all these people from Bharat Varsha, and they were going to work and they were doing this, and they don't know that the Mahabhagwat, the Nitya Siddha, the pure devotee, the Jagat Guru, has now left to be with his Lord in Vrindavan, in Goloka Vrindavan. And I was thinking, now all is lost. So, 25 years later, I see all is not lost. Now I am seeing Srila Prabhupada is here even more than ever by the mercy of Radhanaswami. Because Prabhupada said, I was in his room, and at one time, Prabhupada said, I have given you this big, big movement. If you can, please expand this movement. At least maintain this movement. And then he said, don't let it decrease. And I saw the Jagat Guru start to cry. And all the devotees in the room, Bhakti Chiru Swami was there, we all started to cry. And Prabhupada said, please cooperate. So I am seeing the fulfillment. Actually, I had not gone to Mayapur for 25 years either. And after just coming and being with Jaipataka Swami and seeing hundreds and hundreds of brahmacharis dancing in ecstasy like they can only do in Bengal, I can see, and then coming from Vrindavan before that, where 4,000 of devotees came and danced and glorified Prabhupada, and I can see that actually Prabhupada's desires are being fulfilled by this immense attitude of cooperation. So I am asking one thing from each and one of all of you who are cooperating so nicely together.
please come to my country and show my God brothers and God sisters what it means to cooperate. Because in my country, Prabhupada's movement is not expanding like wildfire here. And we are saddened beyond belief to see how things have decreased. My God brothers and God sisters came to serve Srila Prabhupada and help all of you. So now, I'm humbly requesting you come and you help all of us to again reestablish Prabhupada's movement in this form of ecstatic cooperation in the United States of America. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki! Nam Sankirtan ki! Gaur Premanandi!
Thank you, Dayananda Prabhu. Service and separation is the deepest connection to the spiritual master in Krishna. In a few moments, His Holiness Niranjan Swami will lead us in His very famous devotional Sankirtan. But I'd like to say a few words before. We have heard from these beloved God brothers, illustrious servants of Srila Prabhupada, of how he put his life, his very soul, into writing his books. The immense sacrifice that he performed to translate and give us the Bhaktivedanta purports. Udayananda Prabhu gave a very heart-melting story. After such rigorous day, rigorous years of preaching, traveling, inspiring, guiding, every single night, practically all the night, he would be writing purports to Srimad Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, Bhagavad Gita. And he did it as an instrument of compassion of our Guru Parampara for all of his devotees and for the world. When Srila Prabhupada was in his last days in Vrindavan, he couldn't walk. He couldn't even sit up. He would find the greatest ecstasy hearing reports of how his devotees were taking such risks, accepting such inconveniences to distribute his books all over the world. Next week we are beginning our annual marathon for the distribution of Srila Prabhupada's books for 1 month. It is my very sincere, humble appeal to each of you. Please, whatever you can do, however you can do it, help Srila Prabhupada's heart to find the satisfaction of distributing more and more and more of his books. Udayananda Prabhu spoke about cooperation. When we cooperate to give people Krishna, we attract the spiritual world. So it is a very blessed opportunity to show your love for Srila Prabhupada, to become very dear to Srila Prabhupada by creating a very cooperative spirit of enthusiasm for the month of December to distribute our Guru Maharaj Srila Prabhupada's books, his transcendental ecstasies. It is our greatest desire to share Prabhupada's mercy with the world. And I will be extremely grateful if you take this to heart. Our beloved guide, friend, and well-wisher, His Holiness Srila Giriraj Swami Maharaj, was planning to come to India in December and January to be with us, and also in Vrindavan. But he has a very weak heart on a physical level, and his health has gone down to quite a weak state. So the doctor has told him that he cannot travel. So my request to all of you is that we dedicate this kirtan to His Holiness Giriraj Swami Maharaj and chant with intense sincerity as well as great feeling, praying to Sri Radha Gopinath and Srila Prabhupada to give him strength physically. Spiritually, he is like Govardhan Hill, but physical strength so that he could write his beautiful books about Srila Prabhupada, enthuse us, and very soon be a